C2A. Number 23A.
We come to the next subtone of Truth as Life. And I said the scenery changes, and Mrs. Eddy takes up another subject, namely, what is the real cross that Jesus had to bear? And that the real cross she depicts as the cross of the doubt that his mission will be understood and that his mission will have a universal effect. So let's see what the text says. If his full recognition, see, it begins with recognition, which is mind. Always she starts out with mind as recognizing, as seeing, or things like that. In his full recognition of eternal life had for a moment given way before the evidence of the bodily senses, what would his accusers have said? That was his cross. So he had to see, does life ever give way, or is life eternal? How can I recognize that? And actually we can see that we can only recognize that not through the human mind and human recognition, but through the divine mind. We always must fall back and say, reasoning from cause to effect, we start with mind. That must be understood through its idea. So this is always our origin, our source from which we go out. Even what they did say, namely that Jesus' teaching were false, and that all evidence of their corporeal correctness was destroyed by his death. So this was the great question. Will life be demonstrated if they can kill my body? And that if they could kill his body, could kill him, then his whole life mission was for nothing. And actually Jesus would not have been remembered anymore in our days. But this saying, you see again, saying, mind says, could not make it so. There's always those two things. Shall we believe what people say, or shall we believe what the divine mind says? This is a great point. See, I don't know if that is a practice book of John Dolly or not. He used to say, well, if people come to his office and talk for half an hour about their trouble and what the neighbor said and what the friend said and what the husband said and what this said and that and said and said, he said at the end, is that all? And so the patient said, well, that's plenty, isn't it? And he said, no. If God does not speak, nothing has been said. Would be nice to remember that. If God does not speak, nothing has been said. I always remember when I go through the tone that usually the subject starts with mind, with what mind knows about it. And all the rest doesn't matter. And you see, all that matters is the idea. People don't matter, what they say doesn't matter. All that matters is the idea. So we begin to see that actually what people say about life and death doesn't matter. What divine mind knows matters, that life is eternal and nothing can make it different. But this saying could not make it so. The saying that Jesus could be killed cannot make it so. So what people say are not facts, are not true facts. Only what the divine mind tells us are facts. So we get another point of spirit coming in. The burden of that hour was terrible beyond human conception. Namely, the distrust of mortal minds. That was the cross. disbelieving the purpose of his mission was a million times sharper than the thorns which pierced the flesh. So the pains of the flesh were just child's play against that distrust in the idea which he represented. That distrust was the thorn that did give pain. The real cross, now comes the real cross, before we had just the cross. Now the real cross, which Jesus bore up the hill of grief, was the world's hatred of truth and love. That was it. Not the spear, nor the material cross. Can you see? She gives now that the material cross is not so heavy, that mental cross which he bore was not understanding his mission, has a lot to do with not being able to understand his mission. Wrung from his faithful lips the plaintive cry, Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani. This is translated, that is what we had before, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? And this was also the beginning of Psalm 22. Psalm 22, which just came before Psalm 23, which is the climax of the textbook. The Psalm 23 began that way. I can't read it, it's too long, but it gives, you can read it once, and gives really the picture of what Jesus would go through. My God, why hast thou forsaken me? Our fathers trusted in thee, they trusted, and thou didst deliver them. He was despised of the people. I just pick out some renderings. They pierced my hands and my feet. They part my garments among them and cast lots about my vesture. All that is in here already. You see, in the Psalms, they could see what would happen. And actually what we can see that Jesus demonstrated that Psalms. So, I will declare thy name unto thy brethren. For he has not despised nor abhorred the affliction of the afflicted. My praise shall be of thee in the great congregation. The meek shall eat and be satisfied. And goes on to the Lord, a seed shall serve him. It shall be accounted to the Lord for a generation. See, now she brings in, or the Psalms also brings in what we had, who shall declare this generation? They shall come and shall declare his righteousness unto a people that shall be born, that he has done this. There shall come a people. They could see that it wasn't to the Jews, but that was done for the world. There will be a people. That's why Mary, in his Magnificat, when expecting Jesus, that she showed that this idea, which she could perceive, would really bless the whole world. There was, so to say, the first Jewish thought that would embrace the whole world, and not just their people. She lifted it out of a people universe, of a tribal universe, into the universe. Well, that's so much as that. We go back and see that what really troubled him were not material pains from material things, but that it was that mental state of distrust in his mission, the misunderstanding of his mission. It was the possible loss of something more important than human life which moved him, namely the possible misapprehension. Instead of understanding, you have the misapprehension of the sublimest influence of his career. This dread added the drop of gall to his cup. So this was the point of spirit, where therefore we have to see, if we want to demonstrate life as life, then we must not rely on what people think and what mortals think, what death and life is, but we have to build our consciousness on the basis of the divine mind. What the divine mind says, that is true. And we must see that that life is independent of any misapprehension of life. That's the point of spirit. That no misapprehension of the world about life can touch anything, can touch life. Then another touch of soul. Jesus could have withdrawn himself from his enemies. You see, he could have backed out. He had power to lay down a human sense of life for his spiritual identity in the likeness of the divine. What Enoch could do and what Elias could do, Jesus could have done too. They just translated. They just said goodbye and then they went up to heaven. There was no cross, no pain, no suffering, nothing at all. He could have done that too. He could have withdrawn himself from his enemies. But that would not have been demonstrating the identity of life, life as soul. He had to show that you can kill the body and that that does not touch life. That the death of the body is not death to life, and that the death of the body does not affect life itself. And then a touch of principle, and it's an interesting paragraph here. The side note reads, life power, indestructible, shows now life as principle, that it is indestructible. But he allowed men to attempt the destruction of mortal body, in order that he might furnish the proof of immortal life. So he could only really prove life to be life by saying, you can kill my body, and you can think that you did kill me and that I'm dead, and then I'm going to prove that you could not touch life. I prove to you that body is not life, and that life is not in body or dependent on body. We are on line 11, and I want to bring out something that may be helpful also in your readings. We had there that he allowed the destruction of the mortal body in order that he might furnish the proof of immortal life. That life has a small L. So he proved actually the immortality of an individual sense of life, namely his life. Nothing could kill the life of man. Can you see? Life is capitalized. So nothing could kill this God of man. So she shows here that principle demonstrates itself in its idea, meaning that that principle which is God, life, capital L, demonstrates itself in the human as life, small L, immortal life, small L, individual immortal life. Jesus could give his temporal life, naturally that is a small L, into his enemy's hand, but when his earth mission was accomplished, his spiritual life, life smaller, which meant his individual spiritual life, was also indestructible and eternal, and it was found forever the same. Can you see the eternality of life? So, Mrs. Eddy goes on, he knew that matter had no life and that real life is God, capital L, real life is God. Therefore, he could no more be separated from his his spiritual life capital. You had, can you see, on line 14, you have his spiritual life, the same three terms, but their life is small l, and on line 17, it's his spiritual life with a capital L. Do you see the difference? So you know the author must decide what he wants to bring out. If you just take the rendering his spiritual life, you can really put write that in two versions, either in a small L or with a capital L. And according to that, you mean two different things. You mean in the first case of Jesus' spiritual life, of his spiritual life, meant his individual life that he was exemplifying. In the second place, he said that he is no more separated from God, namely from his spiritual life. So his life was God, and that meant something else, or refers to something else. So that actually we can see that what is brought out here, that he proved that his life is the same life as that life which is God. That he had no other life than that life which is God. And this is a very clear statement that hardly repeats itself in the textbook, which shows that unity, that at-one-ment of his spiritual life, small l, with his spiritual life, capital L, the atonement with God. One has to watch that, and the author must know what he wants to bring out and what he wants to teach. And this same thing actually you have with the term being. Very often one has difficulty in knowing, shall I write being with a capital B or with a small b? Because being is being. So which one is capitalized? Well, being capitalized is being, small b. Always when being refers to the Godhead, then it's capitalized. The moment being is refers to the creation that the one being has, the being of the universe, then it is a small b. This was just a side note, because this question comes up again and again, and it comes up naturally with every author when he comes to that point, and he has to know what he wants to express. Yes, that's the tone of life in its four subtones. We see Mrs. Eddy is trying to bring out really the real cross here, namely to demonstrate that man's life is the same life as that life which is God. Is that a clear statement? So that there is not the life which is God and then a life which belongs to man. But when that life which is God, capital L, life, is individualized in the lives of men, then that life is small l, but also eternal and indestructible. But then it is individualized. So the whole tone of life here would try to bring out that Jesus' cross was really, could he show to human sense that high demonstration? And he said, well, I have to give that proof by first showing the point of view of mind, that if we are not going out from the divine mind, we cannot recognize life to be eternal. Then life gives away and disappears because death is a dream. If I have not the divine mind, I have mortal mind, and mortal mind is a dreamer and can see death. But the divine mind can never recognize death, can only recognize life. And from the point of view of spirit, it says, and that statement remains and is true in spite of a misunderstanding. Whatever people misunderstand about life, that doesn't touch life. Whatever people try to do materially against life and to kill life cannot touch life itself. No accident can destroy life, no disease can destroy life, no sword nor nothing can destroy life. Life is substance, spiritual substance. Then in the point of soul, she shows that Jesus could have laid aside his material life without really proving it to the physical senses, but he said, I can even prove it to the physical senses. And I prove it through a consciousness of principle by beholding and by seeing that principle and idea is one, that life as the principle of life is one with the life of man. They are the one and the same life. Life capitalized. This is naturally what we can do too, that we build up that consciousness also for ourselves. We come to the next subtone of truth. You know where we are? We are in the days of creation layout. We are in the sixth day of creation at the point of truth. We went through mind and spirit and soul and principle and life. And the scenery changes again at the point of truth. We know that the sixth day also is the day of man, but the commandment says, 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work. Here she brings in the picture of Jesus being at work in truth. That's now the picture. What did really Jesus work and what work out? The man is always at work. So, let's see that. The sixth day of creation has seven subtones because it shows, why has it seven subtones? Because it's the very first day where you had the full reflection of God, because man was the full image and likeness of God. That hadn't happened before, so the full picture must be shown through the seven. And here we have truth in seven subtones. Constantly under the picture of Jesus being at work in science. How are we at work in science? And so the first tone of mind will show us that. So we listen a little bit to mind, though naturally truth is the main subject, the workings of truth in the plan of love, but here as mind is showing what? His consummate example, we can see here, is consummate. This shows that he fulfilled by exemplification, by his work, was for the salvation of us all, that a universal plan, the plan of love. But only through doing the works which he did and taught us to do. We still have the working of truth, the working of truth. His purpose in healing was not alone to restore health, but to demonstrate his divine principle. This is an interesting sentence. Here she says, practically, well, she says, the purpose of his healing was not to demonstrate physical harmony, but the purpose of his demonstration was to demonstrate his divine principle. We demonstrate God, we don't demonstrate mind over matter in the first place. The demonstration of mind over matter is a spin-off of a much higher demonstration that we are engaged in, namely that we demonstrate God. In a treatment, I like to demonstrate God. I don't like so much to think about the problem and how that problem can be overcome through a truth and so on. I rather like to in my treatment, to demonstrate that it is impossible for God not to be perfect. Therefore, I build up in my consciousness that God is mind, that he is spirit, is soul, principle, life, truth, and love, that God, who is mind, cannot know anything about mortal mind, cannot be affected by mortal mind. Therefore, no mortal mind has ever been active to bring about the disease. So I hallow God in my treatment. I don't use truth to knock down an error, an opposite. That's what she says here. His purpose in healing was not alone to restore health, but to demonstrate his divine principle. That's what I like to demonstrate. I like to demonstrate the wholeness of God, to the point where I see that there is nothing erroneous in the whole concept of God, that it is impossible that something erroneous can exist in the consciousness of God. That's quite the difference. That's treating in science instead of in metaphysics. How did he do it? Now we come to the tone of mind. He was inspired by God. His basis of demonstration was based on the divine mind that inspires him. He was inspired by God, by truth and love, in all that he said and did. We can say in all treatment that we give, we should be inspired by God and see the infinitude of God and mind. The motives, that's the counterfeit, the motive of his persecutors were pride, envy, cruelty, and revenge inflicted on the physical Jesus, but aimed at the divine principle, love, which rebuked their sensuality. So we see that the fact and the counterfeit, how did the world operate? Their motives were human. Depravity, that was their motives. Jesus did work differently. His motive, his inspiration was from mind. He worked with the divine mind.